सुंदर राधे कुंद में गिरी गोदाम की जय, प्रिंगम दाम की जय, वायु दाम की जय, गंगा माई मुनि माई की जय, तुलसी देवी की जय, हरि नाम संकीर्तन यज्ञ की जय, गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि बोल, ऑल गोरिस सम डिवोटीज, ऑल गोरिस सम डिवोटीज, ऑल गोरिस सम डिवोटीज, ऑल गोरिस शिशि गुरु एंड गौरंगम। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, Today we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, Text Number 57. Etam sastaya paratmanishtam adhyasitam purvatamair maharishivim अहम करिष्यामि दुरंतपरम् तमो मुकुन्दं ग्रीं शिवाय एव। एतं सास्ताय परात्मनिष्ठम् आयासितं पूर्वात्मैः महर्षिः, अहं तरिष्यामि दुरान्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दं ग्रीं शिवाय एव। एतं सास्ताय परात्मनिष्ठम् अध्यासितं पूर्वात्महिर्महर्षिः, अहं करिष्यामि दुरन्तपारम् तमो मुकुन्दं ग्रीं शिवाय एव। एतं सास्ताय परात्मनिष्ठम् Tataya Parasmanishtam. Sitam Kurvata Mahi Maharshini. Etam, this, sam, such, asayam, becoming completely fixed in, paratmanishtam, devotion to the Supreme Person Krishna, adhyasitam, worship. Purvatami, by previous Maharishi, Acharyas, I'm sorry. So, by previous Maharishi, Acharyas, Aham, I, Tarishyami, shall cross over. Duranta param, the insurmountable. Tamam, the ocean of nations. Mukunda Angri, of the lotus feet of Mukunda. Nishevayam, by worship. Ivam, certainly. Translation, I should cross over the insurmountable ocean of nations by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by the previous acharyas who were fixed in a firm devotion to the Lord Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purpose is quite long, so please bear with me. This verse is quoted by Krishnadas Kaviraj in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 3.6. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. In connection with this verse, which is quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that of the 64 items required for rendering devotional service, acceptance of the symbolic marks of sannyas is a regulative principle. If one accepts the sannyas order, his main business is to devote his life completely to the service of Mukunda, Krishna. If one does not completely devote his mind and body to the service of the Lord, he does not actually become sannyasi. It is not simply a matter of changing dress. In Bhagavad Gita 6.1, it is also stated, Anashita karma palam karyam karma karotiya sa sanyasi cha yogicha. One who works devotedly for the satisfaction of Krishna is sannyasi. The dress is not sannyas, but the attitude of service to Krishna is. The word paratmanishtha means being devotee for Lord Krishna. Paratma, the supreme person, is Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha. Those who are completely dedicated to the lotus feet of Krishna in service are actually sannyasis. As a matter of formality, the devotees accept the sannyas dress as previous acharyas did. He also accepted the three dandas. Later, Vishnu Swami considered that accepting the dress of a three danda was para-atmanishtha. Therefore, sincere devotees add another danda, the jiva danda, to the three existing dandas. The Vaishnava sannyasi is known as the three danda sannyasi. The Mayavadi sannyasi accepts only one danda, not understanding the purpose of three danda. Later, many persons in the community of Shiva Swami gave up the Atmanishtha, devotional service of the Lord, and followed the path of the Shankaracharya. Instead of accepting 108 names, those in the Shiva Swami Sampradaya follow the path of Shankaracharya and accept the 10 names of sannyas. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the then existing order of sannyas, mainly Ekadanda, he still recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam about the three dandi sannyasi accepted by the Brahmana of Avantipur. Indirectly, he declared that within that Ekadanda, one danda, four dandas exist as one. Accepting Ekadanda sannyas without Paratmanishtha, devotional service to Lord Krishna, is not acceptable to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In addition, according to the exact regulative principles, one should add the jiva danda to the three danda. These four dandas, bound together as one, are symbolic of analog devotional service to the Lord. Because of the ekadandi sannyasi of the Mayavada school are not devoted to the service of Krishna, they try to merge into the Brahman effulgence, which is marginal position between material and spiritual existence. They accept the impersonal position as liberation. Mayavadi sannyasis, not knowing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was three dandi, think of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an ekadandi sannyasi. This is due to their vivarta bewilderment. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no such thing as an ekadandi sannyasi. Indeed, the three dandi sannyasi is accepted as the symbolic representation of the sannyas order. By citing this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the sannyas order recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Mayavadi sannyasis, who are enamored of the external energy of the Lord, cannot understand the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. To date, all the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following in his footsteps, accept the sannyas order and keep the secret thread and tuft of unshaped hair. The ekadanda sannyasis of the Mayavadi school give up the secret thread and do not keep any tuft of hair. Therefore, they are unable to understand the purpose of three dandas sannyas, and as such, they are not inclined to dedicate their lives to the service of Mukunda. They simply think of merging into the existence of Brahman because of their disgust with the material existence. The Acharyas who advocate the Daivi Varnashram, the social order of Chaturvarnam, mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, do not accept the proposition of Asura Varnashram, which maintains that the social order of Varna is indicated by birth. The most intimate devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, namely Gadadhar Pandit, accepted the three dandi sannyas and also accepted Madhava Upadhyaya as his three dandi sannyasi disciple. It is said that from this Madhvacharya, the sampradaya known in the Western India as the Vallabhacharya sampradaya has begun. Srila Gopal Bhatta Vasu, who is known as Smriti Acharya in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, later accepted three dandi sannyas ordered from Sri Dandipad Prabodhananda Saraswati. Although acceptance of three dandi sannyas is not distinctly mentioned in the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, the first verse of Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita advocates that one should accept the Vidanda Sannyas order by controlling the six forces: Vachya Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Prastha Vegam, Etan Vegam, Yo Vichaheta Dira, Sarva Apunam Kirtibam Sashishat. One who can control the forces of speech, mind, anger, belly, tongue, and genitals is known as the Goswami and is competent to accept disciples all over the world. The followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never accepted the Mayavada order of sannyas, and for this they cannot be blamed. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Sridhar Swami, who was Tridanta sannyasi, but the Mayavada sannyasis not understanding Sridhar Swami sometimes think that Sridhar Swami belonged to the Mayavada Ekadanda sannyas community. Actually, this was not the case. Etam sastaya paratmanishtam ajasitam purvatamahi maharshihi aham karishyami durantaparam tamo mukunda andri shivaya hivam. I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nations by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by the previous acharyas who were fixed in a firm devotion to the Lord Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyana Timarandasya Nantuna Shalakaya Chakshur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Chi Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tirubhya Kripa Sinyubhya Vacha Katitanam Pavanubhyo Vaishnavedo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we are continuing this wonderful narration of the story about Avanti Brahmana. And as we know from the previous verses, he was totally rejected by society. Initially he was a wealthy Brahmin, but due to being miserly, his family at one point rejected him as he lost all of his wealth and opulence. So he decided to renounce the world and basically take sannyas. However, his troubles continued. People were really offensive and inimical to him. They were causing him all kinds of troubles. Remembering his previous nature, they thought that he was still, you know, same miserly person. So the kids were teasing him and like beating him and stealing his water pot, and when he would try to eat, they would even pass urine in his food. Can you imagine what kind of tolerance one has to have to be able to handle such miseries? So, anyhow, the Brahmana was very, very introspective, and he thought, he basically did all, like, you know, analytical study in his mind. He was questioning, are these people cause of my happiness and distress? Are the demigods cause of my happiness and distress? Is it the time that is influencing happiness and distress? Or fruitive activities? Or is it just nature of the soul itself? So he kind of went one by one, and you know, each one he analyzed into details. And each time he concluded, it cannot be, because the soul is different from all of that. It's not dependent on other people, or it's not dependent on devatas, it's not dependent on time, or fruitive activities. So he came to a conclusion that none of this really influences our happiness and stress. And finally he came to a conclusion, which was discussed yesterday. Tamar Prabhu very nicely explained that he came to a conclusion that actually it's the false ego and mind, which is kind of like a biomedium that we experience happiness and distress through. So the false ego gives the shape to all these miseries because of our attachment to the material energy. So finally, in this verse that we are discussing today, when you hear these words for the first time, what is the impression you get? It's the impression of great, great conviction. So he's saying, I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nations. He's not saying, I will try. Maybe I will do, maybe not. No, he said, I'm going to do it. So that is a big, big difference, you know, between somebody who has just theoretical knowledge that, okay, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, and between somebody who has full realization, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, and I want to go back home to you, my Lord. So great, great determination and conviction in his words here. So the purport that we read places a lot of emphasis on the sannyas. And it says, very nicely, it says that the dress is not sannyas, but the attitude of service to the Lord is. So the sannyas is not really, of course, the word is taken as a formality for the preaching purposes, but in actuality, the sannyas is the attitude of service in love and devotion to the Lord. So the purport also speaks about ekadandi sannyas, tridandi sannyas, and you kind of get bewildered, like, you know, so much, you know, information. But if we look deeply, what is the meaning of tridandi sannyas? It is one who dedicates his body, his mind, and his speech into the service of the Lord. So he is completely surrendered. Unfortunately, in this age of Kali, there are many pretending sannyasis. And as we remember the story of Prithi Maharaj, King Prithi was performing the sacrifice, 100 sacrifices, Ashwamedha Yajna. And while he was doing that, the king of heavenly planets, Indra, he became jealous. He thought, like, how could, you know, I'm the known for performing 100 sacrifices, nobody should really beat me in that, you know, that's not fair. So he became envious. So King Indra, he came just in time when they were performing the last, you know, the last sacrifice, and he stole the sacrificial horse. And as he was, you know, running away, Atri Muni, he could perceive by his grammatical powers that Indra is stealing the horse. So he ordered his son of Prithu Maharaj to go and catch him. So the son of Prithu Maharaj, he started running after him with a bow and arrows and was chasing him through space. And as he approached closer, Indra, he assumed such a form that he was disguised as the holy man, as a sannyasi. And when this boy saw the holy man, he decided, I can't kill the holy man. So he kind of turned back, and but as he was coming back at Trimuni, he corrected him. No, you have to go and you have to chastise Indra. He's just pretending to be holy man. So then he started chasing him again, and seeing that he's approaching Indra, he gave up that false disguise and he ran away and he left the horse. So this son of Prithu Maharaj, he took his horse and he returned back to the sacrificial arena. So everybody's glorifying him, you know, everything is fine, you know, they're ready to proceed with the yajna. But all of a sudden, the darkness just clouded in all the arena by his power. Indra just covered everything with the darkness. And again he stole the horse. So again, Atri Muni, he thought, he ordered the son of Prithi Maharaj, go chastise him and catch the horse. So he started chasing him again. And as he approached, again Indra, he kind of dressed himself as sannyasi. And, you know, this boy again, he didn't know what to do. You know, it's just, you know, it's not right to kill the whole man. So he again started going back, and Atri Muni kind of stopped him. No, you have to. Now he's even introducing the false religion. You have to punish him. So again, you know, he started to chase him, and Indra ran away. But at this point, you know, enough is enough. Prithu Maharaj, he took his bow and arrow and was ready to kill Indra. And Brahmins, they said, wait, it's really not appropriate, you know, in the sacrificial arena to you can only sacrifice animals, you know, you can't really kill the king of heaven. But we can invoke with our mantras, we can invoke Indra to enforce him to come here, and then we'll cast him into the fire by the power of our mantras. So as they were just about to put oblations into the fire, Brahmaji appeared. And he said, hold on. So Brahmaji said, it's really not appropriate to kill the king of the heaven, Indra. He is such a useful servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And actually, he is equal to you. He was speaking to Prithu Maharaj. Both of you are famous as devotees to the Lord. So really, you shouldn't do that. And he explained that Prithu Maharaj, you're already on the path of enlightenment, and you're already realize the purpose of all this sacrificial offering, and there's really no need for you to perform 100 yagas. Just be pleased with 99 yagas, and let's make a peace with Indra. So, being such a elevated personality as Prithu Maharaj is, he accepted the instruction of Brahmaji. And they made a peace, and basically everything was fine. But from that point on, even Brahma said, my dear king, do not be agitated and anxious because your sacrifices have not been properly executed due to the providential impediments. Kindly take my words with the great respect. We should always remember that if something happens by providential arrangement, we should not be very sorry. The more we try to rectify such reversals, the more we enter into the darkest region of materialistic thought. Lord Rama continued, stop the performance of these sacrifices, for they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even among the demigods, there are many unwanted desires. So basically, Brahmaji acknowledged that from that point on, Indra introduced that, you know, false sannyas. So anyhow, back to our verse. So, basically, when I came out, Mahaprabhu mentioned, oh, today is the famous verse. And actually, it is very famous verse. And the reason it's famous is because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted this verse when he took sannyas. You mentioned maybe even that nowadays sannyasis receive that verse at the time of accepting sannyas. Possible. But this is famous verse, and basically when Lord Chaitanya, when he was just at the age of 24, he took sannyas, And he started basically wandering around. He, out of great love and devotion for Krishna, he wanted to go to Vrindavan. And he quoted this verse while he was roaming around. And Prabhupada explains, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proved these words, it just emphasizes even more how beautiful this verse is. But as we know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to go to Vrindavan. And Nityananda Prabhu had to come up with a special, scheme to kind of divert his idea. So while he was, it's explained, he was walking for 3 days in the area known as Radhadesh. And Nityananda Prabhu, Mukunda, and Chandrasekhar, they were following him. And at one point, Nityananda Prabhu said, "Chandrasekhar, you go fast to the house of the Advaita Acharya and inform him that Lord is arriving. And tell him to wait on the bank of the Ganga River, to come there and wait in the boat. I think at a place called Shantipur, if I'm not wrong. So, and he said, like, I will go and catch on with Mahaprabhu. And after you do that, go and invite Mother Sachidevi and all the devotees to come to the house of Advaita Acharya. So after they made a plan, so Nityananda Prabhu started, walking fast to catch on with Mahaprabhu. While Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was walking in that district of land, all the people were so amazed by the beauty of this young sannyasi, and whoever saw him would chant, "Hari, Hari, Hari, Hari."
Hari, Hari.
And at one point, there were even young boys, cowboys from the village, and they started following Mahaprabhu. So they just got so absorbed in this beautiful sannyasi that they were spontaneously chanting, "Hari, Hari, Hari, Hari." And when Mahaprabhu saw them chanting, he was very pleased, and he told them, "You are indeed very fortunate." So he patted them nicely on the head and blessed them. So seeing that Nityananda Prabhu, he thought, of a plan in his mind. So he approached secretly the boys later on and told them, "When Mahaprabhu asks you, where is Vrindavan, don't point right away, point towards the Ganga River." So the boys, they listened obediently. Later on, Mahaprabhu inquired from the boys, and he was totally intoxicated in pure love for Krishna. He didn't know where he was. So he inquired from the boys, "Where is Vrindavan?" And the boys, they pointed towards the Ganga River. So Mahaprabhu started walking that path. And Nityananda Prabhu, he very quickly caught on to him. Seeing Nityananda Prabhu, Mahaprabhu said, "Oh, surprising me to see you. Where are you going?" So Nityananda Prabhu said, "Oh, I'm going with you to Vrindavan." And Mahaprabhu said, "By the way, how far is to Vrindavan?" And Nityananda Prabhu said, "Oh, not too far. Just see, the holy river Yamuna is just nearby." And he brought him to the Ganges. So seeing the Ganges, Mahaprabhu thought, this is actually Yamuna. So he offered a beautiful prayer. He said, "O river Yamuna, you are the blissful spiritual water that gives love to the son of Nanda Maharaj. You are the same as the river of the spiritual world, for you can vanish all our offenses and the sinful reactions incurred in life. You are the creator of all auspicious things for the world. O daughter of the Sun God, kindly purify us by your pious activities." So as he was offering the prayer, Mahaprabhu went to take a bath. And soon after, Advaita Acharya arrived in a boat. And then, seeing Advaita Acharya, Mahaprabhu said, "What are you doing here? How did you know I'm in Vrindavan?" So Advaita Acharya, he disclosed the situation to Mahaprabhu. And he said, "I'm most fortunate today, and because you have arrived to the bank of River Ganges." And hearing that, Mahaprabhu said, "Nityananda has cheated me." And Advaita Acharya said, no, my lord, whatever Nityananda Prabhu said is right. Indeed, you just have taken your bath in the Yamuna River, because this exact point where you took your bath is actually where the Ganges and Yamuna flow together. On the east side is Ganges, and on the west side is Yamuna. So whatever Nityananda Prabhu said is right. But please come to my home today. I have prepared beautiful feast for you, with the beautiful preparations of rice and beautiful vegetable preparations. So please come." So they proceeded to the home of Advaita Acharya. And as they arrived, Advaita Acharya was ready to serve them a beautiful feast. They invited also Mukunda and Haridas. But Mukunda said, "My dear sir, I have very important duties to finish, and I cannot take prasadam now." And Haridas, he said, My dear lords, I'm the most fallen in this world. I'm the most sinful. I will wait, and later on I will eat a palmful of rice." Can you imagine such humility from Haridas Thakur? It's incredible. So they were seated down comfortably by Advaita Acharya. And as he started to serve them, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "There's so much prasadam here. I'm sannyasi. I'm not really supposed to be enjoying this thing like this. This is not right for sannyasi." But Advaita Acharya said, "Oh, please give up your concealment. I know who you are. I know who you are, and I know the purpose of your sannyas." And indirectly, what he was referring to, he was speaking about Lord Jagannath, because he, as in the Jagannath temple, he takes his offerings 54 times a day. So Advaita Acharya was thinking like, this is nothing compared to what you eat at Jagannath Puri. Nothing. So, still, being in that mood of sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was very, very modest, and he would just take half of each preparation just to satisfy Advaita Prabhu. On the other hand, Nityananda Prabhu, he started complaining. He said, "What is this? I've been fasting for 3 days, and finally I come to the home of Advaita Acharya, and I'm hoping to break my fast, and there is not enough food. What is this?" So Advaita Acharya said, "I'm full Brahmin. Please accept what I have prepared and don't be greedy." But Nityananda said, "I need to break my fast, but there's not enough food here to even fill half of my belly. You have invited me to your home and you have to provide as much as I want to." And Advaita would say, "I'm poor Brahmin. This is all I have. Please be satisfied. Don't be." He said, "You are a rigid Paramahamsa. You are a madman." So they were kind of joking like that. Very sweet exchange. After they finished prasad, in that mood of joking, Nityananda Prabhu, he took a handful of rice and he threw it on Advaita Acharya. As the rice fell down, few grains of rice fell on Advaita Acharya. And he started to dance in ecstasy. He said, "Today I will become madman as Nityananda, as Nityananda Prabhu, because I have been touched by the remnants of the food that Nityananda Prabhu had thrown on me." So he was dancing in ecstasy. So, anyway, these are wonderful stories, wonderful pastimes. But we may ask, what was the need for Mahaprabhu to take sannyas? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Same thing, what was the need? What was the need for Srila Prabhupada as in such old age to come to the West and go through so much troubles, basically to save the fallen conditioned souls. So that is the real meaning of sannyas. And our acharyas, they set perfect example. And our Srila Prabhupada makes perfect example of what the real sannyas is. We're running out of time. But I kind of wanted to end it with one really wonderful story that Bhakti Charaswami describes in his book. Back in 77, in the spring of 1977, Srila Prabhupada came to Manipur, and he was just returning from Bhubaneswar, where he went for the break ground for the new temple that Gaur Govinda Maharaj was about to develop. So as Prabhupada arrived, all the devotees were ecstatically chanting, and some of them were crying, and they haven't seen Prabhupada for so long. And Prabhupada came in, and they went to the temple room. Prabhupada circumambulated around Radha Madhava, and then he sat down in a deep meditation while kirtan was going on. So after the kirtan was over, Prabhupada opened his eyes and started to speak. And he quoted beautiful verse, or famous verse, Iha yasya hare dasye karmana manasa gira nikilashu apya avashtasu jivan muktasa uchate. A person who acts in the service of Krishna with his body, mind, intelligence and words is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many apparently material activities. So, Jiva Mukta Savuchita, liberated even in the material world. And then Prabhupada went on to explain the goals for our Mayapur project. And he basically said, some people may be envious. Devotees have beautiful facilities, palatial buildings. But then he said, actually that is proper thing, because devotees are like ambassadors from the spiritual world, and they deserve to have all these facilities. He said, these Americans and Europeans, they're not used to harsh facilities in India. Therefore, they're building this beautiful temple and accommodations so they can come and preach. And then he made a beautiful analogy. He said, it's just like a blind man and a lame man. The blind man cannot see and doesn't know where he's going. The lame man cannot walk, but he has eyes. So he said, through ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada said, he was combining Western brains and money with Indian spiritual culture. And then he gave an example, and he said, alone each is severely limited, but if the blind man takes the lame man onto his shoulders, then the combination of the blind man's strong legs and the lame man's good vision will enable them to achieve so much more. America, he said, was spiritually blind, while India was materially lame, but together they could spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So basically, that is the wonderful example of how Prabhupada used his intelligence to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And beautiful example that we should try to follow as much as we can, in the footsteps of previous acharyas. So I will stop here. I know it's getting late. Thank you so much for your attention.
If anybody would like to comment, please do. Yes, come on.
You quoted Lord Brahman's instruction to Prithu Maharaj that he shouldn't shouldn't try to, when there is providential reversal, he shouldn't try to rectify them because it enters the darkness of material anxiety or ignorance or something like that.
Yes.
So that the question, are there any reversals that aren't providentially arranged? And how do, you know, it seems that one would have to have that discrimination. Is it providential arrangement? Mm-hmm. It seems like they are in reversal.
Yeah, yeah. I think in this case, it was even confirmed by the authority. So, you know, sometimes we may question, like, is this reversal due to my lack of care and determination to accomplish something? You know, we may be doubtful, but if we approach the authority, like other Vaishnavas, and we explain our situation, they will confirm, and they will say, Prabhu, maybe you're over-endeavoring, you know, it's maybe not worth, or, you know, they will direct us, you know, this is, you know, this is just a test, you know, don't give up, keep trying. So, I think, you know, often we may not be certain 100% in our mind, is it 100% reversal by providence, or is it due to, you know, or is it just like test? But if you approach authority, we can always clarify.
It's what comes to my mind is that if we are trying very, very hard and have from everything that's presented to us have that covered, but yet still beyond our control, then maybe that's that category. Where it's providential arrangement. I mean, we have just an ordinary day-to-day living, you know, we have certain responsibilities to execute them. Things go well. And we may be doing that, but it might be very difficult circumstances and we try very hard, but it's just way beyond what we can control the normal day-to-day activities.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems like it's in that category.
I agree with you. I think it is. It is, and it does require a great sense of introspection to actually come to the right conclusion. But that's what keeps us going on. I think if we are not tested in our endeavors, we may kind of become a little bit laid back and not so sharp. So I think by the will of the Lord, the tests do come for the good reason. Yes, Madam.
When you're using the word providential, I was wondering if you could put some synonyms or some explanation of how we understand what providential means.
Good question. It's hard for me to pinpoint any particular example, but I think sometime when we are trying to perform our service, we may be, let's say, obstructed by our help, or maybe due to the different circumstances changing, like in a particular place we live. So, particularly as far as preaching you know, devotees work very, very hard. And I know many devotees that did so many austerities to the point of neglecting their health. And then something would happen and they would not be able to continue, you know, by the same pace as they were in the past. So that could be an agent of providence, and not as a punishment or nothing negative really, but more in such a way that the Lord is actually taking care of the particular person, that okay, now it's time to slow down, and you know, rather than being always on the run and traveling and doing so much, you know, the Lord indirectly wants to take care of that person, that that person can perhaps do a different service. And,
I was thinking of, you know, like in Bhagavad Gita 18:14 says there's five factors. So usually the fifth one is and ultimately the super soul. It's the place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul beings are the five factors of action. So sometimes I just think the super soul as destiny, the all-pervading presence of the Lord, the localized aspect. And with the 1861, I'm directing the wanderings of all living entities. So and I think also when the gopis were expressing to Krishna their dissatisfaction with separation, always being separated from Krishna, and Krishna says that it was due to destiny, that we come together, we go apart like the straw in the river, things like that. But they didn't accept that destiny and Krishna were different. They said, we know that you are actually destiny. You can't use that for an excuse. You know, so the tattva of us a bit. So I was thinking that like even, what was it, Grandfather Bhishma, who's asked by Yudhisthira, what's the plan here? You know, what's the plan of Krishna? And they said, I think the sages have exhaustively tried to understand that, and it's not understandable. So it's like the Krishna's plan. So let's just go on without, of course, it's definitely a lot of blame and anger. Without those things, and just Krishna's ultimately good, he's in control. So how can we be benefited from this?
Yes, yes, thank you for bringing that verse. First canto where Vishnu is speaking to Maharaj, that exactly answers our question. Because Vishnu is saying to Maharaj, he's saying, how is it possible that such pious souls, such a pure hearted souls like you, five Pandavas, could have gone through so many tribulations and trials? And then he said, it is only possible due to the inconceivable power of supreme destiny. And he said that nobody can understand it.
Didn't he say, if you have these three things, there's no reason for that? I think guided by the Brahmins, religious principles, which are like that, there's never a reason for that.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, probably. Oh, yes. Sorry.
In the corporate in today's class, they were saying that the dress of the sannyas is not so important, but the actually the principle. But Prabhupada, even in this age, sannyas is not recommended so much. Prabhupada still takes sannyas. So do you want to elaborate a little more?
Yeah. Definitely the scriptures indicate that sannyas is not recommended in the age of Kali. However, Prabhupada said that higher principle was to actually utilize everything in the preaching. And for that reason, if sannyas was appropriate and could be more productive in our preaching mission, he did give to many of the disciples sannyas. And unfortunately, some did read, some did, but many did not. So we have to see that, like in anything in life, we can look at the cup half empty or half full. In this case, the benefit that Prabhupada's analysis did by spreading Krishna consciousness far outweighs any fall downs that unfortunately did happen. So, in the spiritual life, there is always hierarchy of the principles, and we have to prioritize which particular time is more prudent to Lord, more necessary. I don't know if that's. Yes, that culture is still prominent in India and all over the world, actually. I remember one time I was traveling and these Buddhist monks, dressed in a sutra on the airport. And I was just kind of sitting and observing, and I could sense that people actually have respect because seeing the priest dressed in priestly clothing, you need to kind of demand respect, even though people may not really understand who this person is. So that culture of respect is still there for the people in clothing, and for that reason they always have more respect in society, and they can have more teaching influence.
One time we were traveling, we were in Saudi Arabia, that was the airport, and as you got into the plane, the people had the dogs, and I guess we were carrying some food, I can't remember, to prashada, so the dog was attracted to it, and it came. So the people thought, oh, we have drugs, But at the same time, you could see they had the respect that, something is not right here. So they didn't really know how to approach us, I had a sari on, my husband had a burqan. And so we were very tired, and they kept asking us, do you have any drugs? Do you have anything you want to be clear?
Mm-hmm.
And we said, no, do you want some shadow? So they kept asking us, they took us in the room, and then we could see they were a little bewildered because they know we're religious people, but they didn't know why the dogs were so attracted to us. So finally, we opened up the shadow and the dogs went and then they realized, oh, that's what it is. And they were very apologetic. But, you could see even though it was a different culture, they knew something was not,
Yes.
They also have to think, well, anybody can be smuggling anything.
Yeah.
But I thought it was... every culture respect, you see, which is just a religious authority, and there's some respect there. But in India, I noticed especially the sannyasis were very, still, there's a lot of respect. They give them free ride and the bus,
Yeah, definitely, and it is actually our responsibility to preserve the culture and, to the younger generation. I remember when I joined, we were told, as soon as you see sannyasi, you fall down and offer obeisance. And I don't know if that's followed nowadays as much as it should have. It should be followed. But sannyasi should be respected. Yes, please.
It's on this inconceivable plan of the Lord. When we're in the middle of when that plan is being executed, it can be quite overwhelming. But what one way you can tell it's providential is in hindsight. Because oftentimes, the plan of the Lord, when it's executed, it imbues one with deeper faith. You can see, oh, this is what he was doing, and he really is trying to help me. That's it's hard to see when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
That's what Yudhisthira was struggling with.
Yeah.
But there was a major plan that Krishna had for future days and powerful instruction.
Exactly. And as we can see from the lives of Pandavas, through all the troubles they were undergoing, they were continuously taking advice from Vidura, from other Brahmins. So they were never, you know, taking on their own, like, you know, speculative, you know, action. They were always inquiring from sages from yesterday. Narada Muni visited them. So they were always like taking the advice from the authority, and despite all the troubles, they were following the Dharma. Okay. Yes, Madam?
A lot of times I'm trying to remember Krishna, and I have a humorous way of remembering things. So when someone says, how's it going? You know, it's a common gesture. Hey, how's it going? So I say, well, it's going according to the will of the Lord. But my mental concoction says, oh, this is good, this is bad. And you get quite a few reactions. I say that to basically everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, someone passes you in a grocery store, you know, how's it going? I said, oh, it's going according to Krishna's plan, or God's plan, or the will of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, you know, my mind, it thinks, oh, it should be this way, or it shouldn't be this way. And you get the different. It breaks right in out of the ordinary, mundane thinking.
Yeah.
Most of it's useful.
Definitely. That's a wonderful way to actually basically remind ourselves, even if we may not really, you know, like you said, like in our mind, we kind of put that concept that, you know, things should be this way or things should be that way. But just by continuously reminding ourselves, whatever is happening in my life is the Lord's will, that automatically kind of breaks that mundane frequency in our head.
Because the sadhana was always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So if you just remember Krishna, and someone does say something like that to you, it just naturally comes out. If it wasn't, you know, the line that I heard someplace, oh yeah, that's not true.
In
Vrindavan,
Radhe.
Yes.
Just,
thank you. Thank you so much. I think we'll stop here. Thank you so much for your attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.